Hey, everybody. Glad to have you with us for another episode of the Curtain Call Podcast, a production of the Yes Network. He is John J. Filippelli. I'm Justin Shackle. Our terrific producer, Dan Bassone, with us for the ride as well. And we're coming together for a quick episode, four games into the season. And didn't think we were going to be doing this four games into the season, but here's some context. I get a phone call from John Filippelli Sunday night, about 10:30 p.m., saying we need to record a podcast after the Yankees opened the season with a four-game sweep of the Astros over in Houston. And Flip and I were saying to each other, is it too soon? It's April, but it's only the first four games. But so, yeah, the fact is this was a big enough deal for the New York Yankees. So we're going to talk about what you should take away from these four games and kind of keep with you as you watch the team in 2024. But Flip, first off, tell me why you have no hesitation calling anyone at 10:30 at night on Easter Sunday. Go ahead.
Because Easter is like technically over after like 6 o'clock at night, at least the way I look at it. And we're good enough friends where I could call you. I felt like I was really barging in. And if I felt I was really barging into your personal life, you would have let it go to voicemail or something. So the fact that you answered the phone told me that you were ready to engage in a conversation. It was a short one. We had a short conversation out of respect for the hour of the night and the day, the holiday, all that stuff, right? But having said that, you know, there's Easter, there's the Yankees winning, and there's, you know, there's so many things to talk about. But at the end of the day, it was like, this was such great news for Yankee fans that we couldn't contain it any longer. We had to get on the air as soon as we could to express that.
I hear you there. You did ask me if I was sleeping, and I think I said no. I was halfway. I was on the way. I was not.
You were in and out of sleep.
I was in and out. I was on the couch. I was in and out. Didn't really hear or feel the phone vibrating because it's like on one of those, you know, it's on a pillow or a blanket where you got me. I said, yeah, I'm up.
You were fully lucid when you answered the phone. I mean, when you started the conversation. So I guess you weren't. You were in sleep until I woke you up. But then you were out of sleep when you answered the phone. So that made me feel a little bit better that you weren't sound asleep. There's logic somewhere in there. Don't look too deep to find it, but there is.
But we both agreed quickly. We need to record a podcast here. So tell us why this is not an overreaction. Like, why does it matter that the Yankees swept four games in Houston?
When we did our first podcast with Joe Girardi as our guest, which was a week ago, one of the things I said in there, we talked about the series and everybody gave their take on the series. And I said, this is a very, very important series for the Yankees, given the fact that the Orioles schedule was what it was. And you got to see the Orioles as our main competitors right now. The first 30 games they had were all against teams under 500. That gives them a chance to, you know, really rack up a lot of wins. Our schedule was more difficult. We had a lot of contenders in there. It's a little harder for us to rack up that kind of number. So I saw it, that was one. Two, they're our arch rival. You know, they've done a lot of damage to us through the years. The Yankees, if we're going to go anywhere this year in a serious way, we have to right the ship. We have to send a message. We have to show that, you know, that was then, this is now. Well, okay, that was then, this is now. So, and again, they're a great, obviously, they're one of the great best teams in the American League. They're one of the best teams, a handful of really good teams in the American League, and they're one of them. And to beat them is also, it goes back to a statement. We needed to make a statement. We needed to go through a good start. We needed to show we needed to see where all these different pieces that the Yankees acquired through the offseason fit, how they fit. And there was no better way to start than in a place that has been, you know, a house of horrors. Not that Houston, not playing there has been a house of horrors. The Yankees have had a very good regular season record there, but not a very good postseason record there, as you know. So honestly, some of our biggest heartbreaks took place there. We needed to sort of change that narrative or start to change that narrative. And the Yankees did just that with an exclamation point by winning those four games.
I'm with you. I agree. I think they sent a message, but I think the bigger message they sent was to themselves. If you think back to the first, three, four innings of the season on that first game on Thursday, what'd they do? They rolled into three double plays over the first four innings. And as you're watching this, you're saying to yourself, okay, all those good vibes from spring training, everything that we heard and kind of what we saw, does it manifest itself once the games start to count? What are we doing here? What's going on? Is this going to be the same old story? And then slowly but surely, you get three comeback wins in a row. You see them take care of business. Sunday, Soto's right in the middle of it. We're going to talk about him at length, but here's why I think it matters from more of a wide scope. And you're talking about the schedule too. If you look deeper down the schedule, Astros visit the Bronx, for three games from May 7th to the 9th. Do the math. It's only a three-game series. So that means the Yankees already won the season series against the Astros. And if you're a fan out there telling me that, these games don't mean as much because it's only April, you're going to tell me that it's inconceivable that the outcome of this season series may have no bearing on a potential playoff seeding by the end of the regular season? Like, that's not a lock, but it's not certainly inconceivable. So this is how all games are equal, no matter where they are on the schedule. And that's why I disagree with the notion that everybody's playing each other. Everyone has the same schedule. No, it's when you play a certain opponent. So the Yankees looked and played solidly. The Astros did not. That's not always going to be the case this season. And that kind of brings me to my next question for you. How much of this was the Yankees playing well, and how much do you think of it was Houston looking a bit sloppy and a step slow on the field?
I think it was both. The Yankees, yes, they struggled the first couple of innings of game one. They did. After that, I didn't see them struggling very much at all. They took care of the opportunities that were in front of them, which were great. Because Houston's a very good team. The sloppiness and all, they're a really good baseball team. And if you really want to go a deep dive, yeah, they made some errors that hurt them for sure defensively. But really, the reason they lost those games was their middle relief. Their middle relief could not hold anything or could not keep a game either tied or keep them close enough to the ability to come back. So their middle relief let them down. The middle relief last couple of years has been one of the better parts of their team, strong parts of their team, and they lost a couple of the guys that they had from a year ago. So their middle relief was not nearly as good. The Yankee middle, everybody in the bullpen stepped up. The only one who failed even briefly was Loaisiga, who actually in the aggregate did fine, but for going out there for multiple innings yesterday, he had trouble for his first inning, I think, was in the game. So, and other than that, had a little blip. The bullpen held up magnificently. And, although I will tell you, we'll get to the closer, I'm sure, Holmes, but he does cause me a certain amount of anxiety when he goes to the mound, and I'm being nice about this. But I will say that, but the team, honestly, they performed at such a high level. And I got to a point with this after they won the first two games. I said to myself, the way they're—I mean, it's only two games, but it's such a—it's a litmus test. It really is. Even though no one wants to have a litmus test the first series of the season, but that's not what you do. Litmus tests—it just isn't, But you know what? This was a litmus test in a lot of ways for this team, and it sets a really great tone for them. I mean, again, listen. Now they've got to play the Diamondbacks. They got to play Toronto, and then season's really starting flying. But you know what? I really am very, very confident that what I saw could hold up. Now we get to the starting pitching. We got to talk about that at some point. Well, I know we will, but that gave me a little bit of anxiety, despite the fact they held the fort.
Let's talk about the starting pitching right now. Almost the first turn. You have Luis Hill pitching on Monday in Arizona. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. But for the big names that needed to kind of acquit themselves from some down seasons and who would be pitching behind Gerrit Cole, now Gerrit Cole's on the shelf, everyone needing to proverbially step up. What'd you think about Cortez and Rodon and what you saw from Stroman and Schmidt on the back two games?
I think it was heroic. If there's such a word to use again in the first series of the season, using the word heroic, which has such magnificent, tones to the word. But I do think they were heroic in the sense that, Cortez really got knocked around in the beginning. And the tune of four runs very early. Then he sort of settle down, and he gave them another few innings when the Yankees. But you can't take your starter out the third inning and second inning and a series like that. You're going to go through your pen and your pile up innings, and you get run into trouble. He had to gut it out for a couple more innings, and he did. And he gave them really strong innings at the end. So he started out really. He didn't start off well, and I'm not going to say he did. But once he righted the ship, he righted the ship. So I give him high marks for that. Rendon, hung in there for a couple of innings. He got in some trouble. He got himself out of some trouble. Considering the year that he had a year ago, he wasn't someone that I felt the Yankees could count on. Got in a lot of trouble and did not have a magnificent first year with the Yankees. Coming back, a lot of reasons came back from injury, et cetera. But having said all those things, he didn't really perform the way the Yankees had hoped he would perform. And he showed you something. He showed you glimpses of why he was considered one of the better pitchers in the game. You saw some of that in the game that he pitched. You know, again, didn't give you a lot of length. But again, this is the first start out. I mean, how much length are you going to get anybody anyway? So I don't know if you could pine this on length more than it just is. Look, he got some outs he needed to get. He hung in there when he needed to. So again, that's sort of heroic to me. So there you go. There's two. And when I saw I thought the next. I'm sorry. Stroman pitched reasonably well. Same thing. He got it out. He ran out of gas. He ran out of gas. But he gave you a couple of innings and pitched, I thought, pretty decently. And Schmidt shows he's a five inning pitcher. He showed it again. He's been showing it all last year. He showed it again yesterday. That's what he's giving you. He's giving you that. And then he went third time through the order. Girardi was all over it. This is where he gets into trouble. And that's exactly where he got into trouble. And you'd almost see the air come out of the balloon. Oh, five innings. Here we go. And again, I don't want to put a label on him. You know, he's very young. It's only his second season. But, you know, that seems to be what he is. So, but again, he got through it. And the bullpen was able to come in and sort of, you know, save what it needed to save. So, you know, in terms of the starting pitching, I still think it's an area of great concern, especially with call out. And I do think you're going to need another starter or two somewhere here. But they'll be gettable. They'll do something to help that situation. But they got through it, and against a very tough offensive team. Houston is a team that can hit the cover off the ball. I mean, they just do. They're really a great offensive team. Not good, a great one. And the Yankees held them in check, which says a lot about the pitching.
Yeah, through it all, with every starting pitcher we've seen so far, the biggest thing that did stand out to me in these four games is that they did not let the top hitters for the Astros really beat them. Between Altuve, Alvarez, Tucker, and Bregman, they didn't let them impact the game. And I would say some of the biggest outs of the series came against the Alvarezes and the Tuckers. If you took like Carlos Rodon's night, he came out with some big strikeouts against Alvarez and Kyle Tucker as well. Maybe flashing the cut fastball. I think it was against Tucker. Let me see really quick. No, it was against Alvarez, where he put two on in the fourth inning there, end of the frame, by striking out Alvarez on the cutter, not his fastball or his slider. So I agree. The first two, they grinded. I thought they fought. They kind of held the line, as Aaron Boone likes to say. And I thought you saw encouraging signs from Marcus Stroman. Clark Schmidt, you're right. 75 pitches on the nose. What did we see? The started to deteriorate a little bit. The stuff wasn't as sharp as he faced that lineup, started to, at least the third time through. But overall, I would say a solid turn through the rotation. Or so now we see what Luis Hill can do, and then when away we go. That's where I will definitely agree with the notion it's early. You know, how far can you let your starting pitchers go when it is this early? So they got to still get a little bit more loose, and we'll see what happens these next few turns. But overall, solid. I'll go with solid. All right. Juan Soto, talent's obvious. How much is his approach and maybe his work ethic rubbing off on the others?
I think it's incredible. There's no arguing. He's one of the top handful of talents in baseball. You know, you can rank him where you put him is it's subjective. You know, is he better than Acuna? You know, is he better? I mean, he's got so much talent, and he's so good. He's certainly in the top couple for sure. And to watch him play now, I've watched it. Forget about spring training. It's spring training. But to watch him play four serious games against a serious team and have him perform the way he did, he was in the middle of almost everything that they did positive. He had a hand in to either to extend it, or to either to drive it in, or to extend it, or to get on and beat people while the run scored. So offensively, we either walks, or see a lot of singles, you know, run one-on-one games as well. But just his ability to take a pitcher deep into account. I mean, his eye is unfailing. The pitches that were called strikes against him were definitely balls. You could see it on the replays and stuff. You know, see the strike box. You could see they were, and he didn't get the calls. But this guy has an unfailing eye, and he's got tremendous bat control and speed. And I'm watching him is like this is what's watching Tony Gwynn. And that's the only one I can harken back to. I mean, there are others, but he reminded me a lot of Tony Gwynn, except Tony Gwynn didn't have Soto's power. And Soto's not considered, doesn't have Judge's power, right? So Soto is a great hitter he's going to hit home runs, but he's a great hitter more than he is a home run hitter. The same could be said. Tony Gwynn was the same kind of hitter. Great hitter, masterful in there. but not going to hit a lot of home runs, but 15, 15 to 20, something like that. In normal circumstances, Soto was going to hit a little higher than that. In that ballpark, his team was going to hit a lot more than that. So forget about the home runs for a minute. Just the effect he had on the team. I saw every player on the top step every time he came to play. They were all paying every bit of it, all watching exactly what he did, all trying to either cheer him on or learn from him or be inspired by him. Because I think he's inspiring them. And the throw, I mean, the game won. Oh my God! I mean, that was just, again, he didn't have a questionable arm. He's kind of, I mean, I still view him as a sort of an average defender, but the reality is that his offense is why he's there. But you know what? He does a good enough job, and he's got a good arm, and he came up big in a big situation, and that's what you expect out of great players. They come up big in big situations, whether it's defense, offense, whatever it is, and he did it. He did it every single time he was in the game. He came up when they needed a hit, he got it. They needed a throw, he got it. They needed a guy get extra base, he took it. He did everything he could ask for and more, and against an elite team.
Yeah, the late game traffic that this offense kind of produced was something that we rarely saw last year. The amount of walks that we saw in this 4-game stretch, something that we rarely saw last year. 4 or 5 times, we saw a batter go the other way against the shift and put a ball past shortstop. Juan Soto did it multiple times in this series. We rarely saw that last year. So obviously not all Juan Soto, but to me, I think that's an indication that a change in approach is starting to take place, and I think it's rubbing off because of Juan Soto.
I
Any
agree.
other small details that you thought were encouraging, either offensively, defensively? What do you think?
Volpe walked. Volpe got on base. Volpe got a couple of hits. It's like he had to step it up from 209. He had to. And again, it's very early. And I keep saying we know it's early. It is. But I just saw a whole different swing. And the swing was getting results. He was hitting the ball much better than he did a year ago. His eye was more discerning. He was able to grab a couple of walks. Got 3-1 game, I think, the second game, or third game, maybe it was. I don't remember now. One of the games he got 3 walks. I mean, so he's walking. He's hitting the ball. His defense is fine. I mean, I know he won the Gold Glove, but awards are awards. They get them for different reasons. The reality is that he's played good enough shortstop. And the fact is that if he can hit 250, which I know he can, I mean, he can. If you're seeing what he did Sunday over the weekend, he can hit 250. He does that. I mean, this is all the play with house money when it comes to him. So he could steal bases as well. He stole a couple, I think, of this series too. So he's got a lot of talent, and this is just the beginning. But he's got to hit 250 or better. If he does that, this experiment is no longer an experiment. You got yourself a real player.
I think it was telling too. I mean, he for the most part batting in like that number 6, 7 spot. A lot of people pegged him as the number 9 hitter to start the season. R. Troy Benjamin firmly believes that Volpe is going to be in the leadoff spot in short order. So if this continues,
If it
perhaps,
continues,
yeah, if
yes.
it continues.
Troy is right. If it continues, I don't know. I mean, the Yankees don't have a prototypical leadoff hitter. They don't, and they kind of need one. Except they got some really great performances. Guys sitting at the top of the weekend. So, but again, over the course of a season, the water will find its level. So I don't know that that for instance, Cabrera is going to have like a 2,500 OPS. I don't know that that's going to hold, but
Right. You mean he's not going to hit 45 homers? Okay.
or hit the 700, 720. You see
Yeah.
that happen? Okay.
A couple of other small details that I saw that I feel like are encouraging here. So the Yankees and almost every other team in sports, not just baseball here, they're obsessed in this day and age with player rest and recovery. And through these first 4 games, the lineups didn't change that much. And I know it is only 4 games, but I thought this was telling, John. Gleyber Torres leaves Friday's game after being hit in the hand by a pitch, and he underwent X-rays, and he was back in the lineup the next day. Tell me the last time that you saw a Yankee player undergo an X-ray or an MRI or a CT scan or whatever it is, and they were playing the next day. That virtually never happens.
No, not that I can, not in my recollection.
Yeah,
I think
they'd always
I've
hold
ever
him
heard.
out as a precaution. So that wasn't the
Right.
case there. And also, Aaron Boone, the first 2 days of games there in Houston. He was kind of saying that John Birdie would be getting a start at third base after the first two games. But what happened? Oswaldo Cabrera, he went off, and the Yankees kept him in the lineup. They went with the hot player, so to speak. But I think more important that they kind of deviated from their pre-planning, so to speak, and they kind of reacted by what they were seeing between the lines, what the game was telling them. So again, small examples, four games worth of examples. You need to definitely see more games to see if this is truly a shift in thinking or so. But I was encouraged by what I saw in those instances.
As was I.
All right.
As was I, you know, I, when the Cabrera had the weekend that he had, I said to myself, he didn't have a season like this last year. You know, he just was, you know, he really struggled. You know, he shows a lot, has a lot of talent, but he really struggled. And he was on top of everything. He was on top of every pitch. And, you know, he showed a discerning eye. And, you know, I saw so many things there that I hadn't seen at all last year. So, you know, maybe he's improved that much. It was hard to say. I mean, he certainly had a great series. But certainly, if he's holding the fort for LeMahieu right now, if that's what his job is, he's more than held that. So the people that are holding positions for other players, you know, AA who could play the way Cabrera played, you know, they'll force the other players to really battle back for their jobs, because he showed you everything you could possibly want. And the play that Birdie made saved the game yesterday at third base, the ball down the line, and made an incredible. That was Greg Nettles, Cleet Boyer like play. I mean, I hadn't seen that kind of play in a while at third base. And, you know, and no offense to Donaldson or, you know, LeMay or anybody, I just hadn't seen that kind of, that was an unbelievable play at an unbelievable time.
Yep.
And to make that play work the way it did was just show me a lot about him. But the Yankees, that's a great pickup for the Yankees. It was. And at the time, everybody said that it's an interesting pickup. It'll help them in a lot of ways. No, because he's a utility and he can play a couple of positions. He has to hit a little bit. But the reality is this guy can play defense. And it's Yankees need that because they have holes in their defense in certain places. They need these shored up, and he certainly helps you there. As does Grissom, the same thing.
That happened in the ninth inning on Sunday. These were tight games, three of the four games played, so they were a bit itchy in the ninth inning, if you want to call it that. I had a lot of people talk to me over X on Twitter. As I was hosting the post game on WFAN, they said they were a little uncomfortable with Clay Holmes. I know that you've kind of felt the same in the past about Clay Holmes. What did you make of what we saw from the Yankees closer? Because I'm a Clay Holmes defender. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on what we saw in the ninth innings with him.
Well, I'm not out to prosecute him. I mean, I think he's got great. I mean, that sinker is a great sinker. He's got good stuff. You know, it's just that he has to get into trouble before he gets himself out of it. I mean, it seems to be his pattern now. His first half season with the Yankees, he was automatically getting people out. Never got any trouble. Just threw strikes. Did all the things he's supposed to do. And now he doesn't throw strikes. Now they lay off the sinker right away. Now he falls behind in the count. Now he's to come in with a lesser pitch of the sinker, and he gets into trouble. I mean, that's kind of what's happened. And but you know, you almost sit there going, "Okay, here it comes." And it was like I don't want to indict him. He's a major league talent. And when at his best, he's a big-time talent. When he controls that sinker, he's a big-time talent. But by its nature, it's going to go out of the zone. And when hitters lay off it, if they find enough discipline to lay off it, they find themselves ahead in the count, and then he's in trouble. Because to adjust, when he doesn't throw that many pitches. So for him to adjust, what is he going to go to? His fastball? You know, his fastball is decent speed, got good speed on it. Doesn't have a lot of movement. It's like, so you sit there and say, okay, what's going to happen here now? So, I mean, I don't know these. Look, we had Mariano, which spoiled us all. Oh, so everybody in baseball should be spoiled by Mariano. You're never going to see that again. Okay, we get that. Nothing's going to be perfect. Sometimes guys have to struggle. I get it. But he's not consistent enough for me in that spot. That's just my take on it. You know, I run the team, and I have a lot of respect for the people that do. They have a different opinion on it. That's fine. I'll go with what they make those decisions. I don't. If I did, I would look for more consistency in that spot, move him to another part of the bullpen where he could really be effective, hopefully, and not have the final three outs, which obviously determine a gain in way too many cases.
So I ask you this, is your personal preference for a closer maybe to have more of a strikeout pitcher, so to speak, over what Clay Holmes is with his sinkers, plays more of contact, induces a lot of grounders?
Yes.
Because most of the trouble that the Yankees found themselves in the ninth innings over the weekend, they were a result of ground balls getting through the infield. And I don't know. I think you could obviously always look to
Was the
upgrade
play Birdie
a
made a ground
position.
ball to the infield? Yes, it was. Was
Yeah.
that
Well,
ball smacked?
he was positioned the way they thought he should be positioned. Right?
Was that ball cremated or what?
Was he playing on the line?
Was he on? He was close to the line, yes.
He was on the line.
Okay.
I mean, there's a reason why he's there. Yeah, it was a hard hit ball, but the first two batters who got on,
Yeah.
their ground balls weren't hit all that hard. A lot of infield singles happen against Clay Holmes. Like I get you could
So that's why
always
if he's a
look.
strikeout pitcher, it's better to
Oh,
strike people out
there
because
you
they don't know
answer
how to
my question.
defend.
Okay, yeah. I look. You could upgrade the position for sure. You could always
Yeah.
look and try to upgrade the position. But I feel, and you mentioned it with Mariano Rivera, people are kind of waiting for the first outcome that doesn't lead to a flawless outing for Clay Holmes to get all over him. If you want to. If you want to go through all these games, I guess I can. On Saturday, he hit a batter, put the tying run at the plate, but the sinker didn't look poor there. He threw, I think, 11 pitches, 10 or 11 pitches. Sunday, again, doesn't look good because of the results. But what exactly happened? Like I mentioned, ground ball pitcher induces two ground balls through the infield. This happens a lot last season. He gets the ground balls. Obviously, the results aren't there, but the birdie play, he's positioned perfectly. He faces a talented hitter like Alvarez, who did tag a ball to the warning track, but that's Alvarez. Okay. He gets the out there. And then Verdugo makes the
Makes a great
catch
catch
on
to
a
save the
soft.
game.
He does, but the ball is not hit hard. It's not tattooed. And I'm defending Clay Holmes because a part of me thinks that the Yankees universe, and I'm part of it. I grew up a Yankee fan and I get it. And I mentioned this to you before the pod, but like, yeah, I think the ninth inning is a sensitized moment for a lot of Yankee fans because they're just so used to flawless performances from a closer and Mariano Rivera.
Well, that's
Those
true.
outs are really tough to get.
Of course they are. But Alvarez almost took the flagpole off. I mean,
But then
Alvarez
too on
well,
Alvarez,
I get it.
like Josh Hader got beat by Juan Soto yesterday.
Okay.
So it happens.
Right.
You want an like my point is if you want an upgrade and people talk
I
about
don't
an
want to be scared out
uncomfortable,
of my mind every time somebody goes to the mound.
but that's the nature of the ninth inning and that's the
It,
nature with
is
the
it? Is
majority
it for every? Is it really? You
that's
feel
the
that way about
nature of,
Hayden?
name four others that you could feel comfortable with on a
That's that.
consistent basis. The thing is, you're not going to be able to. They're not available. And the four people that you're talking about, they're on other teams that are in World Series contention. They're contending for a championship.
Right. No, I get that. I mean, I get that. I understand there are other teams, but I'm just saying to you that in order for the, I mean, look, it's nobody's going to be more. We've talked about that. That you're right.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're right. But there is not enough consistency there for me. It's like I'm not saying he's not a talented pitcher. I'm not saying that for lack of someplace else to go, he's not the guy to have out there. I'm just telling you that if, to me, it's a long season, and I didn't see a whole lot of consistency last season out of him. I just didn't. I saw him get in trouble. I saw him get beaten. First year he had the gig, he was hard to beat. Just was that maybe people weren't used to his stuff. They hadn't seen enough of him. There's a lot of reasons why, but I think that over time, I think he showed that. I'm not saying he's not capable. I don't know anybody's coming, oh, he's capable. You hate the guy. I don't hate the guy. I think he's incapable. I just think that, well, they hit the ball way too hard off of him for me. And I know they're a really good team offensively. So you got to give them credit too, because they're a great offensive team. This is a lesser offensive team. The results come a little easier. Okay. But when you're playing, anytime you play a really good offensive team, it seems to be that they can smack him around and get his number. Even if he gets the outs, he's getting smacked around. And to me, it's like I want to see more consistency out of my closers. That's it. I mean, if you're going to win a championship, you got to have a consistent closer. And I don't know that he's the guy right now. I have doubts that he's the guy in the long term. That's just the way I feel. It's not that I don't like him, but what he is, he's fine. But the reality is, if the Yankees are going to win a championship, I think that's an area you have to take the X factor out. That's just my two cents.
Is there another reliever on this roster that you want to test and see if they have that consistency? And can you afford to do that?
You know, I don't know. I mean, like, I always felt that Loizaga has been hurt a lot, which is unfortunate because I've always liked his stuff. He's got great stuff when he's a weapon when he's healthy. And, you know, you saw glimpses of it in the series. He also some get hit a little bit, too. So he hasn't pitched a whole lot. And, you know, I still feel maybe in the long run, I don't, but he's capable. See, here's the other thing. The Yankees need, especially if the pitching staff isn't going to go deep into games, they need relievers who could give you multiple innings. And he's one of those guys, Loizaga, who could give you multiple innings. In theory, he can. So you want him try to work exactly where he is. I don't think you move him anywhere. But the reality is someone like that who's got that kind of stuff, swing and miss, swing and miss, swing and miss is what you want. Because, again, that takes all, you talk about the element of what's necessary. It takes it away. If you're not hitting the ball, you're not hitting the ball, right? You don't have to worry about great plays on the outfield or great plays at third base or anything else. Or balls that get through the infield, because you don't have to worry about that. Because swing and miss is your best defense. I still feel that's what a closer should be. And I know that there are not a lot of them out there. But teams that win championships have those closers. And, again, I'm not. People think I'm attacking this guy. I'm not. I'm just saying is I just don't know that he's the answer to what we need. That's what I'm saying to you.
Tell you what, I think a lot of fans fall into the same category as you do with these beliefs. And I hear them. If you're telling me that you prefer a power strikeout pitcher for a closer, we can have that conversation. But as a ground ball pitcher who rarely gives up home runs, I think Clay Holmes does his job. I don't think there is an automatic guy out there right now on a World Series contending team. I mean, you want to talk about Edwin Diaz? He was hurt all last year. He had one sensational season 2 years ago. Talk about Emmanuel Clase. Okay, has he really been on the brightest of stages? I think he's as automatic as it probably gets going for closers today. Josh Hader out there. What did we see yesterday? He got beat by Juan Soto. Yeah, I'm cherry picking, but people talked about the long fly ball that resulted in an out against Clay Holmes off the bat of Jordan Alvarez. So we're talking about these pitchers going up against the elite hitters of the league. We can do this all day. My point is, I think closing is obviously difficult. And if you can upgrade from Clay Holmes, if you look for more consistency, go for it. But good luck with actually trying to find it and make it happen.
I think it can be found.
All right.
I think it can be found. I mean, look, you don't, I mean, the Yankees have more pressing needs that they need Gil in the rotation. Okay. I think you're going to see a lot out of him. I mean, he had a great spring. He's always had really good stuff. That to me is where you go. Now, again, I'm not saying I'm advocating right now with Cole being out that's where the Yankees go, but they have a number of power arms. Some of the starters that you saw through spring training, they're very young. You know, honestly, I think it's easier to develop that than it is a really strong starting pitcher who can give you a lot of innings. Okay, I think it's easier, not easy, but easier to find a power arm that can give you an inning and strikes people out. The Yankees have needs that start in the rotation. They're not going to go there right now. As long as Holmes is getting it done to their satisfaction, they're certainly not going to go there. But potentially they could go someplace like that. And that's where I think you have to go in the long term. You've got to find a power arm who strikes people out. That takes away, I mean, 1-2-3 is better than the 4-5-6-7. And here we go, you know.
And I'm with you there. That's where I'll agree with you as we close out this conversation. A potential solution is more likely to be found internally than trying to go shop and acquire another team's closer at the moment.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. Anything else here before we land on the plane after a whopping 4 games?
You know, Boone made a lot of good decisions. I thought Boone did a good job. He never gets enough credit, you know, for the things that he does right. Does a number of things right. And I thought he made some really good decisions. But he handled the lineup well, handled the bench well, used the bullpen the way he should. When he had to, he went there. He tried to give as much length as he could to the starters until he was, in his mind, it was really the end of the line for that particular day for them. I thought he gauged that really well. Didn't leave people in too long. Gave enough people at bats to rotate things around a little bit where he needed to. I thought he showed a lot of versatility in this series against a tough team.
I'm with you. I pushed the right buttons, made a lot of good pitching decisions in the moment, and it obviously leads to 4 wins. Never hurts when you have Juan Soto, though, right as the centerpiece of your offense.
And so many
Incredible.
little things that he did, some big things too. You know, the home run was a big thing, the fly was a big thing, the throw was a big thing. I mean, obviously, but the some of the things that were smaller but really kept the conga line moving and were masterful. Some of that hitting, I mean, he's just such a great hitter. Watching him hit, my God. I mean, as I said in the first podcast we did, he's pulling every breaking pitch and he's going with every fastball. So when you could do that, when you could pull your breaking pitches and then just put the fastball wherever you want to put it. And he was putting fastballs between shortstop and the bag at second. I mean, he's putting the ball, left-hand hitter, just putting him there. Then he went a little further between short and third on a play. It was like, how does he do that? How does a lefty hitter do that? But it's almost like he puts the ball exactly where he wants it. And that's to try to sign not only a good hitter, but a great hitter. It's a great hitter, the elite hitter.
He's
But yes,
must watch. Juan Soto is must
must
watch.
watch.
And
Absolutely must watch.
that's a big reason why we remind you right now, Yankees visit the D-backs the next few days. That means a lot of late night games. I'm gonna have to take a nap here. Flip, take a nap. Coverage on YES, first two nights at 9 o'clock. And then it is the home opener on Friday. Extensive coverage on the YES and the YES app. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Curtain Call Pod. For our terrific producer, Dan Bassone, and for John J. Filippelli, I'm Justin Shackle. We'll talk to you next time on the Curtain Call Podcast, a production of the YES Network.